My name is Deb Walker, and I am the executive director of Citizens Project, one of the organizations that is co-hosting this event tonight. So thank you for being here. Thank you on this cold day. As a part of our ongoing commitment to civic engagement, transparency, and accountability, Citizens Project has hosted nonpartisan election education forums and produced voter guides for the past 27 years. And as we've seen the tenor of political conversations degrade, Citizens Project is even more committed to creating space in our community where citizens can have civil conversations about difficult issues. We are honored to create that space tonight for candidates and citizens to interact with you, the voters, in a respectful manner. Your friends and family who can't attend tonight will still be able to hear this forum. We are grateful to have KRCC here with us, and they are going to make the entire night available for live streaming a little bit later. I'd also like to pitch KRCC. We love KRCC because they are public radio, and they hold the same values as we do at Citizens Project, and they are in their pledge drive. So if you are not a supporter of KRCC, I would encourage you during this pledge drive to go do that. They are champions of democracy as well. Citizens Project will publish our voter guide that will be available in The Independent next week and next Friday in the Colorado Springs Business Journal. It can also be found at citizensproject.org. Events like this are only possible with the help of our co-sponsors and collaborators. And tonight we thank the League of Women Voters, who are always faithful. And yes, we love the League. Representatives of the League will be here to collect questions from the audience tonight. So we are grateful for their participation. Speaking of questions, we're going to be handing out forms for questions, and we are not gifted at reading bad handwriting. So please write legibly, and also please ask questions instead of big, long statements. Ralph will be up here trying to figure out what the best questions to ask are, and we're going to do our very best to get as many issues as is humanly possible tonight. We really want to cover a wide range of issues, but we have to read the questions. We are grateful tonight for the Pikes Peak Library District. They have provided the AV equipment for us, so you can hopefully hear me. A timekeeper is going to alert candidates at 30 seconds, 10 seconds, and when their time is up. Audience members, we are leaning on you to refrain from loud clapping or disrespectful noises during our forum, and we're asking to have no signs in the audience. Candidates and issue groups have been invited to put their signs and literature outside, so if you want to talk to anybody or pick up some information, do that just right in the entryway. And now I'm going to pass off to John Weiss from the Colorado Publishing House with some very important things to say.
You're taller than me. I want to do a few thank yous. First and foremost is Janice here, Montoya, from the Briarhurst? She's working. The Briarhurst, this is one of the few things I really want to applaud so she can hear it. We partner with them on all our forums. They do a great job. And so if she comes back in, we'll applaud. But thank Janice when she comes in. We'll wait until she comes in and we'll applaud for her. We have a lot of VIPs here, and I'm sure I'm going to miss some people. We have several city councilors right here. We have Gary Smith. We have Becky Elder. We have Susan Woolbrook. We have Bob Todd. Have I missed anyone? Nancy Fortune. I don't have my glasses on, so everything's okay. Thank you. We have former representative and former state senator Michael Merrifield. We have our superintendent of schools, Elizabeth Domange. I hope I said your name close to correct. And we have the head of the Pikes Peak Library, who is also head of the Manitou Library now because it's one system, John Spears. We have former mayor and current state representative Mark Snyder. Sorry, I didn't see you. We just snuck in. Is Marcy here? Marcy, I didn't see you. We have Marcy Morrison, who has held almost every job in Colorado but is our former mayor. And Stan Vanderwerf just walked in, county commissioner for us. I don't see him, but hello. He's over here somewhere. And I want to do a special shout out to our current mayor, Ken Jaray, who has done a huge job, and we thank him incredible for his service to our community. I want to thank Rhonda Van Pelt and Jack Elder from the Pikes Peak Bulletin. Would they please stand, Jack? And I would like to thank Taylor, who has no last name on my notes, from Citizens Project, who will be our timer. And I want to make a request. This is a very difficult time for newspapers. I have 8 of them, I should know. One of my favorites, and by far our smallest newspaper, is the Pikes Peak Bulletin. There's 3 ways you can support the paper. You can subscribe. It's $20 a year for home delivery for 52 years. If you have a business, we think we're the best deal in town for the West Side, and we live and die on advertising. And the third thing is you can tell your friends and neighbors to do the same. With no further ado, I'm going to turn it over to a man who we brought on into our company, and since he's retired, but we never let him really retire, he's a man who I believe is the best journalist in the Pikes Peak region, Ralph Rauten.
Thank you. Somebody told me once there are a couple of rules to being a moderator for something like this. First is to say as little as possible. And second is one is a singular goal, and that's that as soon as everybody leaves, they forget who the moderator was. So that's my goal for tonight. Obviously, we'll be building up toward what for most of you, because of the uncertainty involved, is the biggest drama of the night, and that's the mayor's race. But we have a few things to take care of on our agenda first. We will also obviously have a discussion pro and con on the match, the Manitou Arts, Culture, and Heritage ballot issue, and we'll have a brief presentation about the second city ballot issue that most of you probably don't know much about, and you'll walk out of here and you will know, and that's 2E. But first, we've got some winners already in the election for both the school board and city council, 3 positions for each are on the ballot with 3 candidates. So that makes it nice and easy. But we still have invited the winners in those races by being unopposed to say a few things if they would like for, you know, maybe up to a minute. If it's less, that's fine. But we'll start with the school board. And the first candidate, if he's here, is Gus Moen here.
Yeah, right here.
Gus, feel free. Come on up.
You want me up there? Or?
Sure.
I don't know if I can burn a whole minute. You don't have to.
So, I'm Gus. Gus Moen. So yeah, I won a tight race for the school board. I am excited to join the new members as well as the current board in taking Manitou Springs School District 14 to greater things. Looking forward to working with the team. I was kind of mentioned to kind of talk about maybe the one thing or the thing I'm most focused on the board. I'm already at 30 seconds. Trauma-informed care is my baby. That is my passion, and that's what I'm going to be working towards. There was a school board meeting earlier this year that talked about a partnership between the district and the city, and I am going to be working very hard to make that happen. I work with a group out of San Antonio that's taken their whole community in making it trauma-informed, and I'll be working to work with them and bring their success to Manitou Springs, not only through the district, but also through the city. So the mayoral candidates will be hearing from me as well. And I'm over time, so thank you all. I'll be around if anybody has questions after the show.
One of the three winners in the school board race, Dr. Jack Sharon, is out of town and did send his regrets that he couldn't make it. Offered to send a statement, but we figured if he can't be here, he'll have a chance to communicate. Then finally, we have somebody who just can't get away from public office and at some level, and that's Gary Smith. Gary?
Well, I want to thank everybody for being here, and I guess another reason that the reason I got interested in the school board is 2-3 years ago, we were primarily one of the focus people that kind of got city council and school board meeting on a biannual basis. And I want to keep that up. I've learned what the school board does. I'm interested in that. And again, I guess I'm just like a glutton for punishment, so I figured I'd go out and do it again. But I was out campaigning today, and then I realized I didn't have to do that. So thanks.
Okay, first input of the night, we need to talk louder. More loudly, whatever. Let's move on to the city council and the three candidates who will be on the ballot. And you can vote for up to three, so you're all good. First up, we have Judith Chandler. Is she here? There she is. There.
Good evening, and thank you for loving this town as much as I do to show up on a chilly evening to talk about issues that are so important to us. My name is Judith Chandler, and I am going to be very humbly your public servant elect. I'd like to start by saying that I'm going to be real clear about who I will be serving, and that is you, the residents of Manitou. I live on Becker's Lane. My husband and I relocated here close to 2 years ago. We've been El Paso County residents for over 40 years, but I've been living just on the west side of you. I've been, my career is as a nurse practitioner. I'm also a massage therapist and Reiki practitioner. And I owned a medium-sized clinic in Colorado Springs. And I learned how to negotiate contracts, get rental space, hire people, fire people. And after retiring from that, I downsized a little bit to a small business in Manitou, and with all the issues in the last year that I've had to deal with that. So I'm really, really supportive of small business owners in this town finding rental space I could afford that had parking and was handicapped accessible for my clients was really difficult this past year. So my number one issue is climate change. We have got to protect our pristine environment, and we have got to protect the haven that is Manitou. We have to tackle some really tough issues, and those issues include parking, and they include traffic, and they include our changing climate. But we have to do that in a way that balances the needs and desires of our residents with the tourists that come and visit us. So big shoes to fill, but I'm grateful for the mentorship that I've already received, and I really look forward to working with you. Thank you so much.
Next up, we have John Shada.
Good evening. I moved to Manitou Springs, I believe, exactly 40 years ago, almost today. And I have loved this community. I've served on city council 8 years. I've been involved in all sorts of controversial things, from gambling with Manitou Springs to even some of the more recent issues. You'll see me around town most of the time walking my dog. And if you have any thoughts or inputs, I am more than interested in your input. Thank you very much.
And finally, we have Julie Wolf.
Hi, everybody. I look forward to serving on City Council as well. I moved closer. Oh, okay. I look forward to serving on council. I moved to Manitou about 35 years ago. I raised my two children here, and they attended the Manitou schools. I've been informally involved in different issues over the years, some of which with John Shada, involving trying to prevent gambling from getting legalized here in Manitou, for some of the older people who might remember that, and trying to prevent the additional mining at Waldo Canyon, and providing some behind-the-scenes support to Higginbotham Flats when we were trying to acquire some property up there and prevent it from being developed, and have served on the Planning Commission for the last 10 years. And I feel very honored to be able to help serve the city, and I'm open to people's input. And thank you for coming tonight.
We'll move right on into the discussion on the match ballot issue, also known as 2D. Before we go into some of the details, before I go into a few of the details, though, there is an issue about the sunset of the ballot issue and some uncertainty. Well, I won't go into any more. Ken Jaray is going to come up and discuss this particular part of the subject.
Thanks, Ralph. Just very briefly, a number of us were quite surprised today to find out that the changes that the City Council had made in the ballot issue from first reading to second reading regarding initially it was drafted that it would sunset in 15 years, and you know, on second reading, council agreed that we should extend that to 25 years, and that change did not get made administratively. So that means that the issue that's on the ballot is that this tax will sunset in 15 years. That's the bad news. The good news is I don't believe that it will have any impact on what's going to move forward if, one, the ballot is approved, and two, that the match group or the city council comes back with a bond issue, which needs to be put forth anyway in terms of trying to generate enough money for expansion of the library, renovation of the library, et cetera. It was always planned that that issue would come back to the voters next year. And so what will happen is the amount of money that we get in for next year and for the 15 years doesn't change. So what will happen is next year, assuming that it moved forward with the bond issue, that the number of years that it sunsets will then be correlated to the need of the bond. And we don't know that this year, which is why the bond issue is not on the agenda or on the ballot. So as soon as that information is determined, the bond issue is nailed down, and along with that would be a second issue that would ask the voters, do you want to extend this from 15 years to however many it might take to address the bond issue? So that's basically the issue that we found out today. We apologize about that mistake. It's something obviously we would have preferred not have happened. It did, but fortunately it should have little, if any, impact on moving forward. So that's what I've got. Thanks.
See, he did a lot better job than I would have ever done. A little bit more detail for those of you who don't know, this ballot question would bring back a tax that recently expired a year and a half ago that was 0.3% added onto the sales tax. It will two-thirds of the money, which is anticipated that nobody knows exactly, obviously, how much this would produce, but it's been estimated somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000 a year. So somewhere between, say, $200,000 and $260,000 a year would be used for facility improvements at the Carnegie Library, the Manitou Arts Center. It would also go to the Manitou Springs Heritage Center, the Marymount Castle, and the Hiawatha Gardens. City Council will determine which organization gets which gets the funds there. The remaining one-third or so anticipated to be $100,000 to $140,000 a year will go towards programming and projects of local nonprofits that foster the arts, culture, and heritage within our city. Some of the groups that could apply include Manitou Music Foundation, Manitou Springs Arts Academy, Concrete Couch, the Manitou Springs Arts Council, Manitou Paints, and on and on. You probably know a number of them yourself that might be interested, including any new nonprofits that might come up along the way. City Council will determine how that money would be invested and broken up in the form of grants or whatever. And it is anticipated that council, although it's not part of the language, but might form an advisory board that would offer suggestions on how to allocate those funds. And with that, I didn't want to read the whole thing because if I had, you would have been asleep. It's one of those long ballot question things, and you know what I'm saying. You've all read them on a ballot, and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. You wouldn't want to do sentence diagramming. But now I want to bring up Natalie Johnson, who's the coordinator for the proponents of the ballot issue, and City Council Member Bob Todd, who is on the opponent's side. And they're going to take turns speaking. First, they'll each have 3 minutes, and then they'll each have 2 minutes for their second turn, and then we'll be done with that part. So, Natalie, if you and Bob could come up, and you all can.
And I need help with a little portion.
Okay. Natalie will go first, 3 minutes, then Bob, 3 minutes, and then they'll each have 2 minutes.
Good. All right. Here we go. I selected the short end of the stick. 360 registered voters signed our petition. Over 100 of you endorsed our ballot measure. A dedicated committee has been working behind the scenes to make this happen, and Manitou Springs City Council referred this initiative to the ballot. I am one of many. I am simply the unlucky person with the microphone tasked with sharing this initiative that is modeled after other successful programs in the state. This ballot measure is about stories and people. Of course, it is about money and transparency, but it is about investing in our community's core values and the infrastructure and programs of the nonprofits that do so much for this community. It is about our stories and our past, present, and most importantly, our future. My story is similar to many. I moved here 16 years ago and opened a bookstore in our downtown. I joined the Friends of the Library 12 years ago and the Manitou Art Center Board 11 years ago. I became the director of the MAC 8 years ago and serve on the Board of Education for District 14. I also work as the director of the Creative District on Economic Development. This ballot measure is something that I have wanted for over a decade. These programs and projects have needed funding for decades. This story is not new or special, but this opportunity is. This is a big deal. This story is not, it is about passion and stories and feelings and the reason that we live here and the reason that we have pride in Manitou Springs. This November, vote with your hearts. One, support a functional and inclusive historic Carnegie Library for all, ADA compliance, free classes and programs for everyone, more space equals more opportunity. 2, $100,000 annually will be used for nonprofit projects and programs throughout the community. 3, Match2D supports 30% of Plan Manitou's long-term goals. This ballot measure supports our city and community priorities. 4, Match2D reinstates a 2018 sales tax. It is not a new sales tax. 30 cents for every $100 spent. 5, the MAC, Heritage Center, and Miramont Castle have given back to this community for decades. This ballot measure will give them a small amount of secure, long-term financial support for deferred maintenance, matching grants, and other difficult-to-fund needs, and we know how to stretch a dollar. 6, art and heritage tourism is great tourism. They stay longer, spend more, and tread lighter. This is the kind of tourism we want. I shared my story with you at the beginning of this, but this is about your story too. Laura has been working on the historic Carnegie for 17 years. Michelle has been working on this for 30 years. Think about your story and vote for your story and vote yes for 2D this November. Help keep Manitou, Manitou.
Good evening.
Oh, you guys probably can, you can't hold your sign while he's speaking, I don't think. That would be mean. Sorry, thank you very much.
The mic is working? It is, okay, great, thank you. I have a new friend up here, the mic. Thank you all for being here this evening. Neither I nor anyone in opposition to the ballot measure are against supporting arts, culture, and heritage at Manitou Springs. We can all agree on the mission, but we do not agree on the means. If this measure is approved, there are unintended consequences that will sabotage the best of intentions. How can this be, you might ask? Here are a couple of perspectives you might consider. Let's start with the 66% tax receipts that would be dedicated to both facility improvements and operations at the organizations you've heard named. That amounts to $260,000 in the first year and will rise each year when tax receipts grow. That figure was justified by the match proponents assigning up to 50% of the receipts to cover a $2.6 million taxpayer bond for future library expansion. That will leave $140,000 perhaps to be allocated to four organizations, about $30,000 each annually, as depicted on the match website. Until the city formally approves a $2.6 million improvement for the library, until the city has a definitive bond proposal priced at current market, all is speculative. If the plans aren't approved or the voters do not agree to assume that debt, the average allocation to four organizations would rise to about $100,000 each. Pause for a moment and recall 2 years ago, the voters rejected the multi-purpose facility $4 million bond issue. Fast forward to today. The fire department focused on the most critical element, training, and shortly ground will be broken on a $400,000 facility that meets the most critical needs. That's at one-tenth the bond proposal. Before we are done with the library, this experience suggests the school district and the library might collaborate with their shared need for space, parking, and traffic flow in the most congested and dense area in the city and come up with, as the fire department did, a solution at a fraction of the cost. You got the message. Increasing sales tax to support the match bond issue is the cart before the horse. Let's move to another perspective. The role of government and your council as your representative body is the safety, health, and welfare of the community. Had you been at last Saturday's budget meeting, you would have learned the best minds, namely our new city administrator and our outside financial experts, have warned the council our financial indicators are steadily moving from yellow to red. City fund balance continue to decay. Our mainstay sales tax, 8.7%, is already the second highest in the region, and the city needs to find another source, needs to find other sources of money. Attend the city administrator's budget review evening on either October 24th or 29th, and provide your thoughts to Ms. Howell as to how to consider and what we should consider for new fund sources. The role of any nonprofit is to run on a balanced profit, And I have suggestions as to how these nonprofits can find alternative sources for money to be continued. Thank you.
We have the talent and resources to make this work, and our nonprofits know how to stretch a dollar. You will more than get your money's worth. In addition, this program is modeled after other successful programs and will be a catalyst for other communities. Raise your hand if you served or are currently serving on a nonprofit board that could benefit by the Match 2D initiative. Raise your hand if you have attended high tea at Miramont Castle, enjoyed a library lawn concert, sat in the MAC's giant desk or concrete couch's sidewalk sofa, have been spooked by the Heritage Center's ghost tours, have strolled through our art galleries and museums. Today, we are asking you to vote for your vision of our future. We are living in a fear-based era. Do not vote out of fear. Vote out of hope. The answers to many of your questions will be in the next edition of the Pikes Peak Bulletin, on the website, or can be answered by our committee members and trained supporters. Vote for a better future and know that your community has the talent and the energy to get us there, and know that if we all contribute a little, we can do a lot. Vote out of hope. Vote yes for 2D this November. Thank you.
Natalie, and thank you. I could have raised my hand for 80% of those events, but I didn't want to distract from your presentation. Just coming back to what are the other avenues that our nonprofits have to raise money? Let me just suggest two highlights. The rest will be in the Pikes Peak Bulletin next Thursday. One is the Cultural Office of the Pikes Peak Region is developing a 10-year plan for our area, a strategic plan. They just completed the first 10 years. They're going on to the next 10 years. Manitou is a strong player in that group, and I would suggest this type of a proposal should be done on a regional level. That's why it's successful up in Denver. It involves 7 counties, et cetera. Here's another option that we could do. All the energy behind the match proposal could establish a Manitou Springs Foundation similar to the Pikes Peak Foundation and raise monies for and facilitate the growth of these organizations. But let me give you a last and brief perspective. It is important that you, as our constituents, understand the distinction between council referring a ballot to the ballot, referring a matter to the ballot, and endorsing a matter on the ballot. Ballot Measure 2D, after council's purview for almost 4 months, was referred to a ballot by a 4-3 council vote, barely a majority. One vote made the difference. It did not make it to the ballot by a citizen petition due to technical errors in that process, so a compromise was struck. However, the match team did not press City Council to endorse 2D, perhaps because they knew, as council did, at least one of our members in favor of putting it on the ballot was opposed to the 2D compromise. We experienced a similar situation with a multi-bond issue presented on the ballot 2 years ago. Council never voted to endorse it. My suggestion, with all due respect, trust your elected officials when in doubt. You are now better informed. Hold on to your ballots as you speak with your family and neighbors to consider the pros and cons of this issue. Read the next week's edition of the Pikes Peak Bulletin. Do not throw this to our next mayor and council to sort out one hand tied behind their back as to how your taxes must be rigidly allocated over the next 15 years. Provide them with the flexibility they need to prioritize our funds first and foremost in the interest of our community's safety, health, and welfare. encourage and support our nonprofits with your gifts of time, attendance, money. I certainly do, and I'm sure you all do too who are here this evening. Thank you. Vote no on ballot measure 2D.
Thank you, Natalie and Bob. Okay, we could do a couple. We just don't want to get too far behind our schedule here. So
I read the ballot summaries from the county of El Paso. There were no arguments for this 2D, and there were no arguments against submitted in the official literature from the county. Why didn't either of you or any of you decide that that was an important enough venue for you to write these things up at that time? That went to every household in Manitou Springs.
I can answer that question. So unfortunately, I was not informed of the deadline or when that should have been submitted, so I found out afterwards. So we certainly were upset that we did not have something available for that. I think a lot of it just has to do that we've had, you know, three city clerks in the last few months, and so there's been a lot of transition, and so I think it's just been difficult for us to track all of the dates and deadlines. It was not intentional.
I would concur with Natalie's answer, but I would further explain regarding this issue. An item before council for 4 months, how could it be that it went on that long? Well, I can explain that. The match team and city council were like ships passing in the night. And it was only on August 20th in maybe a 40-minute session the council had to make the judgment call, should this issue go on the ballot or not, because the initial petition was not valid. Council made that call. You already heard that, a 4-3 vote. You've already heard how council would have leveled out on endorsing it. Thank you for the question. Very insightful.
Just to follow on, wasn't this whole thing, if my memory serves, tried in the city of Colorado Springs some years ago for a facilities tax or a cultural tax, and it went down miserably? Is that correct? Does anyone recall that?
Can someone, this was before my time, but I believe it was county, a county initiative?
Right.
I can also add to that question, which is the following. The city of Denver has such a tax. They've had it for 30 years. Coincidentally, it's coming up for renewal on their November ballot. Their particular adjustment to the sales tax is 1/10 of 1 cent, as opposed to ours, which is 3/10 of 1 cent on the dollar, or 3 percentage points, excuse me, on that. I point that out. It takes a large critical mass to do an effort like this. The electors to the group that sign those monies are politically appointed by 7 different counties. So I really question, you know, Manitou can't do it all like a big city. We will be collecting one over 150 of what's happening up in Denver.
No, it is true. The state is tracking us, and they're really excited, and they're looking at Manitou as being a catalyst community for other communities to implement similar initiatives.
And with that, we could go on and probably have a forum just on 2D, but I appreciate both of you giving your time and comments tonight. We're going to move on to the other city ballot issue, 2E, and I actually intended to read that to you, and somehow between my desk at home and getting to here, my printout of that ballot issue, the language, didn't stay in the same place in my pile, so I don't have it, but we have an authority on the issue anyway, who we had intended to bring up, and that's Mayor Ken Jure to explain ballot issue 2E for you. Thank you. Ken?
Well, I don't have the exact language, but let me tell you what it says. It's pretty simple. So according to Tabor, let me back up. In 2004, the city issued some bonds for the downtown improvement. I would just call out and thank Marcy Morrison in particular, and there are a number of people in this room that pushed that forward. So when those improvements were done, we realized that the sales tax revenue we got to pay for those bonds was more than we expected, and we ended up with an extra $182,000. And so City Council referred the issue to the voters, as we're required by Tabor. Can we keep that money, or should we give it back? If we were to give it back, it would account for about, an average household of $400,000 would receive $75. So it would be a rebate, a one-time rebate in your property taxes. And so I'm supposed to give you the pros and the cons. So a reason to vote against it is because you could use the $75, and I'm sure we all could. A reason to vote for it is because the downtown needs additional work. So since those improvements were done, we've really not done a lot to keep up with what needs to happen in terms of some of the infrastructure down there and so forth. So the pro to voting for this is I believe that your new city government, and when I say new, we have all of the department heads with the exception of one, have since changed over in the last 18 months. And so we have a new group of people, a wonderful team, that will put that $182,000 to good use and come back to you, the community, and say, here's what we did. I can't make a promise for the next council, but I would assume and hope, and I would assume that our city administrator would come back next year and said, for $182,000, here's what we got done. Not to leave any misconceptions, as you realize $182,000 doesn't go all that far in terms of downtown improvements, but it'll accomplish a lot. And so that's why we're asking to keep that. We're asking to reinvest it in our downtown. The ballot issue specifically says it will be reinvested in our downtown. Doesn't go into our general fund. It'll be restricted. And so we're asking for permission and the trust to allow us to continue to invest in our community. Thanks.
Okay. Now we move on to the mayor debate. And before we get started, I'm hoping that at least some of you have come up with questions that you would like to submit. And if Citizens Project could help us out on gathering those.
League of Women Voters.
I'm sorry. Both. League of Women Voters deserves that. Thank you, Marcy. We had a coin flip between our two candidates, Alan Delwich and John Graham, and it turned out that they were going to go in the same order for opening statements as well as closing statements. And that's with John going first, right? And
right.
And followed by Alan for both. We'll alternate some on actual, questions as we go. If you would feel more comfortable giving your opening statement, which will be 2 minutes each, feel free to come up here. Seems like this microphone might be working a little bit better, but hopefully we'll. Seems more appropriate for the opening statements and maybe the closing to be up here. So, John Graham.
Hi. Thank you all for coming out tonight. It's a little chilly, obviously. I think they over-advertised the severity of the storm. The coming years are going to be challenging. We need firm leadership, sensible priorities, and clear goals. We need citizen involvement, and we need to have our passions reignited. We need to get things done. We need to act on many plans. We need to turn our numerous studies into results. The following points are the essence of my platform. We need to protect and enhance the quality of life for locals. We need to spend our tax money wisely. We need to capitalize on the talents of our citizens. You are the key to our future. The city must operate efficiently and deliver essential services on time and with a smile. Communications between the city and public should be improved, and I'm pleased, for instance, to say that our new police chief is making a real point to go out and meet people and put a friendly face on the police force. Why I'm qualified to be mayor. I owned and operated the Pikes Peak Journal, Manitou's weekly newspaper, prior to the Bulletin, for 18 years. My newspaper background gave me a lot of experience in how Manitou's lifeblood runs. In my second career as a software engineer, my work gave me extensive experience in project management, organizational operations, and engineering practices. I was a technical lead the majority of that time. My management responsibilities cultivated a sense of teamwork. I mentored others and supervised and collaborated with people every day, qualities that will be useful in government. I'm a Manitou native and a lifelong resident of the region. This is home for me. This is the place I care most about. I've seen the fiber of Manitou across many years and from a variety of perspectives. I've seen it in city council chambers, certainly, but just as much from schools and from nonprofits, from fundraisers and benefits, from celebrations and disasters, in good and in bad. If you remember building the play park at Manitou Elementary or the chair project on Manitou Avenue, or if you've watched a Manitou Boy Scout reach the summit of Pikes Peak, then you share with me a special sense of what a place this is, the place that we call home. If you invite me into your home as mayor, I will work hard and strive to do a good job. Thank you.
And now, Alan Delwich.
Hi, it's great to see so many people show up here tonight on a chilly night. I've been a citizen of Manitou Springs for the past 37 years. Initially, I lived in a somewhat deteriorating motel on Becker's Lane. Later on, I moved to an apartment and finally to my house that I've been in for the last 36 years. I have felt honored to be a part of this community throughout that time and have never regretted being a citizen of Manitou Springs. In my professional career, I spent 40 years as a software developer and for a time had a small company. I started my career, I was a programmer for a small local government. So I experienced reality from inside a budget-constrained small local government. Later on, when I was running a small business, I dealt with the government from the other side. I got the perspective of dealing with government, of having to deal with government accounting rules, contract management, jumping through all the hoops that were required to please my government clients. Later on, in the mid-90s, despite a lot of professional and family challenges, I decided I had to jump in and start getting involved in our community. I discovered that there are many opportunities to actually be part of the solution and help solve our challenging problems. Over the years, I've spent 25 years on various boards, commissions, and committees. These experiences, both professional and through my participation in our government, have given me great insight into the challenges and great opportunities of responsible governance. I feel like my experience, both professionally and through our government, will give me the skills and the ability to lead our city. Thank you.
Again, if you have questions to submit, what we're going to have is some media questions, and then I will be having a few questions that are coming from the audience. They won't be my questions. They'll be your questions that have been submitted. First up, from the media side, We have Abigail Beckman, host of Morning Edition and a reporter at 91.5 KRCC. Southern Colorado's NPR station. Abigail is a Colorado native, and she's previously worked for newspapers and radio stations in Kansas before coming here where she belongs. She'll come up, and each question will you'll be given 90 seconds, and we'll try to stay as firm as we can to that limit when Taylor starts ringing her chimes there. It'll be time to stop. So, Abigail.
See if I can. Thank you. Appreciate that. So, like Ralph said, I have two questions. This first one is two parts, so just a heads up, and it's a 90-second answer period. Alan, you'll have the opportunity to answer first. If elected, what do you see as your favorite part of being mayor, and how will your style be similar or different to that of the current mayor? And we'll have you answer from your seats.
Okay. Well, I think the favorite part will be having those meaningful conversations with my peers on city council. I feel like my style, which I have demonstrated in the last 10 years as chair of the Planning Commission, is that I listen. My style has always been to make sure I listen more than I speak. I find that it's valuable to respect all the dialogue, all the conversations of those others in the room. In the years deliberating on the Planning Commission, we've had many heated, stressful conversations. We haven't always agreed on items, but we talk. We talk it out reasonably and deliberate, and we vote. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. But when we walk away, we're all smiling and we're all feeling like we've accomplished our responsibility, which is to move the city forward.
And John, you can go ahead, or if you'd like me to repeat the question, no, I can do that too.
I think that's okay. Thinking back, some of the things that I've been most enchanted about Manitou is the way we've solved problems at times. And frequently we've done, things have come about through very quirky, unanticipated paths. I think what's neat about that is that many people become involved. And maybe this is a little bit analogous to the six blind men and the elephant. We see things differently, but when it comes together, when the whole process is integrated, we get something that over time people have come to love and have an affinity for. And that doesn't happen all the time, and maybe it's just a minority of times, but you can look back and say, wow, you know, we really started off from a lot of different places, and we made something come together that we're all proud of. I think that's rewarding.
Great. And the second question, we'll switch the order of answering just to keep things fair. So, John, you'll have the opportunity to answer this one first.
Okay.
We're looking for your thoughts on traffic and congestion issues with the ever-growing popularity of the incline coupled with the scheduled reopening of the COG.
Great question. Okay, top of my list. And since I'm first, you know, Alan may be having some similar sentiments on this. One, it's way beyond time that we regulate the incline. The incline needs to be managed. Thank you. And several weeks ago, Al and I were actually talking about this, and he brought up the trail to Hanging Lake in Glenwood Canyon. Go out and Google Hanging Lake, Glenwood Canyon. You can see how they do it. I think that's a model that we ought to take a look at closely. Briefly, what it is you can go online, you can reserve for $12, you park in Glenwood Springs, the shuttle bus takes you out and brings you back from Hanging Lake. The $12 goes to it goes to the shuttle, it goes for your parking, it manages the area, it provides restrooms. Those are things that we don't have here. We talk about taking care of the environment in our future, and by God, we're missing the bet. We really need to address the incline. Thank you.
Alan, go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you, John, for referencing that Hanging Lake example. I think that's an excellent opportunity. I think we have to look at that I've been counseled that Colorado Springs is a big dog and we have to be careful and we can't stir them up too much or watch out. I don't agree with that. It's our town, it's our city, and we will take control. I think part of the real travesty of what the mismanagement of the incline has done is absolutely destroyed the bar trail. It used to be a wonderful place to bring your family, to walk with kids, and now it's a terror. Going there on a Saturday morning, you take your life in your hands, and I feel like we have to keep working towards controlling the incline, and consequently we'll control some of our traffic problems. Possibly as an interim step, because it's not going to happen overnight, we could consider doing some creative things with how we manage our free parking. You know, we have free parking by the Memorial Park. We have free parking in Hiawatha Gardens. We could consider trying to level out some of this incline traffic by maybe having a fee, having a parking fee till 10:30 or 11 in the morning. It wouldn't necessarily impact our tourist trade, but it would hopefully level out some of the incline traffic. Those people who don't want to pay the fee will come later in the day. And we'll also generate revenue to help have those shuttles go.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Next up, representing the Bulletin, none other than John Weiss.
I'm going to ask questions about disasters, and Alan will get to go first for the first question, and then John will get to go first for the second question, and you have 90 seconds. Here's the question. It's hard to believe, but just 7 years ago, our city was consumed by fires. 6 years ago, we were hit with floods. If elected, what, if anything, do you think Manitou still needs to do to be prepared for future natural disasters? Alan, you have 90 seconds.
Well, I think we have to be diligent in doing our fire mitigation. I think as far as floods, we've done a lot of work in the canyon to do mitigation. There are still items to consider in terms of refining the way the water dumps out. I think, basically a major event would still cause a pretty dramatic event in the downtown area. So we have to look at continuing to refine what the work that's been done.
Okay. Good comments. I think we ought to, Higginbotham Flats has historically been used for emergencies, and we don't seem to recognize that. I hear conversations about the future of Higginbotham Flats, and I keep jumping up and saying, if it's a vacant lot, we can put helicopters there and whatnot. So I think we, and as far as a long-term use of that property, the highest and best use of Higginbotham Flats is as an emergency staging area. A lot of that is city property, so I think we maybe ought to formalize that. Secondly, the fire department recently produced a document on fire mitigation. They're going to be promoting that with citizens, so that is something you probably want to be aware of. I'm concerned about homeless camps. If you've wandered up off the Inman Trail and good places up off Spring Street, you wander up that gully towards Eagle Mountain, you'll see there's a lot of abandoned campsites, actually maybe some active ones. People are building fires up there and whatnot. So that's a concern. I think we need to address the peripheral areas where the potential for fire is there. We should exercise our fire hydrants. I think at the budget meeting last Saturday, the public works director mentioned that we're not doing that routinely. So we should check out our and also other safety equipment. For instance, the floodgates at the bottom of Williams Canyon down by the cliff house, we should check and make sure that stuff's working. Thanks.
My second question is about man-made disasters. Next Monday, members of the Westboro Baptist Church, in quotes, will be holding a service right outside Manitou Springs High School. If elected mayor, what do you see your role as the community leader dealing with both bad opportunities or bad issues or concerned issues as well as good things? What is your role outside of the official duties as mayor? And particularly, what would you do about, if you were asked, what do you do about the Westboro Baptist Church coming to outside the high school on Monday? And John, I think you go first.
Yeah, sorry, it's my turn to go first. First off, I think in groups like the Westboro Baptist Church, they thrive on publicity. They thrive on attention. They're a lot like a spoiled brat. What do you do to a kid when they keep jumping around and acting up? Well, you ignore them. You don't give them any kind of reinforcement. Same thing here. I think we do our best to ignore, to pay no attention to them. Let them come, exercise their First Amendment right, and let them go home. A half hour, nothing happened. They drove to Colorado and nothing happened. They can take the T-shirt with them. My grandparents took me to Colorado and nothing happened, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt. I'd say ignore them. I don't think it's productive to have a counter-protest. I don't think... I think these are individuals that are just a little bit beyond reasoning. So let's put our time and do something productive. My thought is I wouldn't send my kids to school that day. They're out of school. Thanks.
I have to agree that they are publicity seekers, and the best thing we can do is ignore them. I would do everything John said, basically. We leave them alone, and we try to act like they're not there. I think we do have to be careful, and in situations like this, there are always going to be some people who will get passionate and want to make a statement. If you look at social media now, you can see there are people who are saying, yeah, you know, I don't care. I want to say something. I want to be there. And so we do have to be there. We have to be prepared to make sure that we don't have an incident, because that's our whole goal of being here, is to try to create a provocation and have a lawsuit and waste a lot of our taxpayer money litigating.
Okay, now we're going to move into the audience question portion of this. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a preview here. We're going to do a few of these. Our goal is to finish, and it's a hard goal. We're going to do this. We're going to finish this a little before 7:30. So we want to try to move as fast as we can, deal with as much as we can, and then you'll have some time to visit and discuss once we're done. But also, the last question that will be asked, just so that you all can think, and maybe a little multitasking here, is we will ask each one of you to ask the other a question. This is something that in a past forum, it really was something that was turned out to be one of the best portions of the whole forum. So I wanted to give you a little warning so it wouldn't come as a total shock when we get to that. But first of all, we had two questions from different people, one from a lifelong resident and one from someone who's only lived here a few years, about marijuana. And I'm going to summarize them and put them together. But basically, the point is this, that it's been said that the city is too dependent on marijuana revenue, and obviously that at some point that strong contribution to the city budget might not go away totally by any means, but might be diminished if recreational marijuana is ever available anywhere else in El Paso County. What do you see as being a plan for diversifying city revenue as that time approaches? And we'll start with Alan.
Okay, well, first of all, I feel like we have a little bit of time to address this issue. I know our general fund has, the contribution of the marijuana revenues has really ballooned our our opportunities in our general fund. A lot of the expenditures that we've had have gone into matching grants for all the hazard mitigation things that activities that we've done over the last 5 years. I think as we're preparing for this eventual apocalypse when we lose the revenue, we need to just pay attention to what our expenditures are and slowly wind it down. One opportunity we have is we have a URA with sitting on a huge piggy bank, and we need to think about how we can be creative about having a mixed-use environment there, have some new venues. One of the areas that we've actually really created a pretty good presence in El Paso County is with our music venues. We need to capitalize on that. We can look at more restaurants, more items like that to attract people into our community. And the other thing that's been tossed out is let's look at possibly trying to come up with a different mix of attractions that will attract a higher paying clientele to the city. The reality is right now we're counting on $10 million of sales per month on marijuana. I think we have to be realistic and know that that's going to be a hard push to get there. Some of the things we're doing to attract to have a bigger footprint in the creative and arts realm can help. And as we move forward, we just have to start paying attention to what we have and spend our money judiciously.
That's a good question. I think it's also a hard one. This is a question that Manitou merchants and the Chamber of Commerce have been asking ourselves for 30 or 40 years probably. I think one of the things we have to do, and Alan mentioned this, is we need to look for a higher dollar customer. We need people who are going to spend more money. I think the transition that we've seen in our shops over the last several years is that we've moved from, say, the cheaper, traditional tourist items to pricier merchandise that appeals not only to tourists but to people in Colorado Springs. When you think about it, we've in El Paso County, I think we have something like 600,000 people now. That's a much stronger market than we ever had in the old days of Manitou. So we need to be marketing ourselves to Colorado Springs. That doesn't necessarily help our lodging operation so much, but it will help restaurants, shops. We can capitalize on some of our entertainment things. This is a thorny problem, but that's one thing. I think we've talked about other kinds of bringing other kinds of industry from time to time. That's pretty difficult. That's hard to do in a town like ours. We do follow the paradigm of hospitality, of tourism, and I think we could capitalize with the higher dollar customers. Couple things. Alan mentioned fiscal responsibility. We definitely need to be serious about how we spend our money. And I think one of the things that we maybe aren't addressing now is how to go after grants. My understanding is the city has a grant administrator but not a grant writer. The school district doesn't have a grant writer. We could probably capitalize and leverage some of our funds towards that. That might help us. Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on to a couple of questions. It'll be probably a little bit faster answers, a little simpler ones. This comes from Carrie, and it's intended for both of you. We'll start with John. What do you feel should be done with the Cheyenne Village property as it becomes vacated?
You know, I'm kind of torn on this. Okay, the Cheyenne Village, we talk about, okay, so one of the thoughts is we're going to put affordable housing in there. Where are the people from Cheyenne Village going to go? I mean, those are some of the most vulnerable people. You know, if you want low-income housing or low-cost housing, let those folks live there. That's my feeling. That's not probably a very thorough answer, very good answer, but it seems to me like it was a nice thing that Manitou did. We showed that we accepted everybody, that we had a place for people. Dress it up. The buildings are worn out, but it seemed to be a great place for individuals who had those kinds of needs. That's not really an answer I'm giving you, but that's how I feel. sorry. And that's how it's going to be tonight. Sorry. In the future, maybe I can come up with a more rational answer, but I don't have a good one for you for tonight.
Okay. Alan? Well, I agree with the sentiments. I think it's disappointing that individuals have had to leave Cheyenne Village, but it's not our doing. It's a state mandated decision that individuals have to be spread out in the community and not all concentrated in one area. So that's not our choice. Meanwhile, that property is for sale. It's going to be sold, and we have an opportunity to do something creative with that property. Many of the cabins, especially on the west side of the creek, are historic properties. They do have historic value. They're part of the log cabin district, and they could be reclaimed and they could be used for workforce housing. And how exactly this rolls out really depends on getting someone committed, possibly collaborating with someone like the community land trust to manage the property. But those cabins could provide some reasonable places for people to live. And, you know, we have an example in my neighborhood, the Western Cabins, which it's been a problem at times, and other times it got cleaned up. And there are people, very stable people, working people who have lived there for years. And it has been a valuable opportunity in our community for providing housing. And I think we could do something similar with the Cheyenne Village property and consequently not lose that historic resource. The people in the neighborhood love it. It's it's really pleasant when you stand there on anybody's front porch and you look out there. Why would we want to get rid of it? Why would we want to scrape it off? It's something that we should cherish, and we should try to find a way to keep it in our community.
Okay. Next one, and let this is summarizing a question, trying to simplify it, and also for the sake of time, if we can hold this one down to even 30 seconds, that would be great. There more and more drones are becoming a growing presence. We've seen them some in parts of Manitou, but also in other parts of the area. How would you deal with the increased presence of drones coming to Manitou, and would you ban them? Alan Delwich first.
Every time I see one when I'm walking in Red Rocks Canyon, I wish I had a baseball pitcher's arm and I could throw a rock and knock it down. I don't like them. I don't think they need to be around. I think they're a nuisance, and I really don't have a good handle on the legal ramifications, but I do think that we could control them, and I would be strongly in favor of not allowing them in our neighborhoods.
John Graham?
Yeah. I agree. I think they're invasive. We didn't move to Manitou or anywhere to be harassed by drones. I feel it is an invasion of privacy, and it's a nuisance. I think we would. My inclination would be to pursue whatever litigation we could to outlaw them. Enforcement seems like it'd be quite a problem, but I guess that would be a start. There must be other communities that have the same problem too. Thanks.
Okay. Another kind of a summary question. I realize, and this came from emails as well along the way, but that the neighborhood, neighborhood owners, homeowners in the Crystal Park Road area have got many concerns and frustrations. I won't go into detail describing them. I think you all know them. I think it's best to say, what do you think the city's role should be in going forward dealing with Crystal Park Road residents' issues, starting with John Graham?
Okay, my understanding on Crystal Park Road is that 90% of people in the area, they were canvassed by volunteers. 90% of the people said, we don't need sidewalks. We don't need lights. We don't need changes, except we want the speed limit enforced. When 90% of the people in a neighborhood say that, I think that's a pretty strong mandate. I think it's time to say, good enough, let's all go home and do something useful, and move on to, we've got other problems. I cannot see any point in pursuing it. I do think that, I mean, this has been presented as part of our culture of engagement. That sounds good, but it seems like it's turned into more cruel and unusual punishment for people.
Alan Dulwich.
Yeah, I have to agree with that last statement. I've walked a lot on Crystal Park Road and asked people about it, and I think it's the predominant opinion is we don't need to light our neighborhoods up. We don't need cement or concrete sidewalks. Possibly there are places to mitigate with some more substantial walking paths, but please don't change the charm and ruin our neighborhood. We love it the way it is, and I think the city's role should be to listen rather than to mandate decisions. Certainly we need to consider how to control the speed. There's no justification for people going 35, 40 miles an hour down that road, and I certainly am comfortable with more law enforcement if possible. It's been tossed out, the idea of speed humps, not big, massive speed bumps, but there are things, if you ever go over by the Broadmoor on 2nd and 3rd Street, they have these speed bumps. Speed humps, as long as you go to the speed limit, there's no problem. I think that would be a wonderful idea, a wonderful solution. But in any case, ripping up a neighborhood, lighting it up, is not the role of our government.
Okay. One more question, and then we'll do the each one of you asking the other. And this is a question from James, a longtime resident of 26 years. What would you say are the most essential three things you think City Council must collaborate on with the mayor to accomplish in the first 6 months of your term? Alan Dulwich.
Well, a couple of weeks ago I would have said we need to figure out how to get a city manager, but thankfully our city council has taken care of that for us. I think we are going to have to write away. Well, it depends. If the match initiative passes, that's going to be something pretty quickly we're going to need to come to some agreement on. I think it would be wonderful if we would consider revisiting some of our parking fees and parking strategies. A lot of people have come up with a lot of creative suggestions for how we can increase our revenue and still maintain our residential parking programs. And finally, we need to really come to some agreement on where we're going, what our targets are going to be for fiscal responsibility.
John Graham.
Okay, so my top three would be managing the incline, dealing with traffic and parking problems, and the capital improvements plan and dealing with infrastructure. So there's three things. The incline is a huge problem in my mind, and I know people have been working on this. I think basically we've gotten beaten up by Colorado Springs. The assumptions that were made 3-4 years ago about the incline usage have pretty well been disproven by reality. We have much higher usage than we had expected. The impact is far more severe. Manitou holds issued the conditional use permit on this. We have the nuclear option. If we had to shut down the incline, we could. Okay, I realize that's probably going to get me burned at the stake, but somebody's got to say it. We need to start getting tough with Colorado Springs. We need to sit down at the table. We don't have to bully them. They don't have to bully us, but we need to try and come to some sort of reasonable position there. I think that also affects parking and transportation. We need to deal with that before the COG opens up again in 2 years. And capital improvements is huge. We need to go after many of our deferred maintenance issues. And I see Mayor Giray out there shaking his head, and I know he's worked really hard on this, and there's a lot I have to learn from him, so I want to acknowledge his efforts there. And it's not an easy thing that we're facing. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I've done a coin flip of my own here, and John, you get to ask the first question of your opponent, Alan Delwich. John?
This really isn't fair for Alan because I'm kind of long-winded. But basically, Alan, what I'll ask you is that in some of the contracting things that I've seen and been watching over the last several months, it seems to me like Manitou could really benefit from having a code of conduct and how we evaluate contracts and perhaps even with that a code of ethics. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm
closer to the mic, the better, please.
Sorry, I don't really understand exactly what you mean by a code of ethics. I think we certainly have to be diligent in doing our contracts. One thing I've noticed that we do sometimes have contracts that have no deliverables other than deliverable hours. I think we have to have meaningful milestones, progress payments based on accomplishments rather than, bill you for 20 hours a month, and maybe we do the job this month, maybe we do it next month. I think we can go ahead and get more diligent about having meaningful contracts.
Good answer.
Okay. And, Alan, your question to John Graham.
Okay. Now, this one is somewhat unfair to you, but it is a question that I'm curious about it because it'll be a challenge. If you're mayor, we will have 4 of the 7 councilors will be within a 500-foot radius of each other. You, Bob, Julie, and John will all be there in your one neighborhood. And so what will be your strategy to ensure the community that you can have a fair, balanced approach to all neighborhoods?
That's a good question. I hadn't given too much thought about that. I think I know the other people reasonably well. Maybe Julie not so much, but I know who she is, and I know some of the things she's done in the community. You know, I think we all have integrity, and that we want to be fair. And I don't think we're doing this job for the paycheck. Obviously, I mean, I think we deeply love this community and the people, and I mean, gosh, we could walk 20 minutes and be on the other side of town and represent another ward, I suppose. But, honest to God, I think we're going to work hard at being fair to everybody.
So. Okay. That brings us to our final statements, which we will hold to 1 minute each. And John Graham, you go first. Okay. Feel free to come up here. You're fine down there.
Okay, yeah. So I wrote this out so I wouldn't take too long. Okay. If I'm elected mayor, I will work hard and bring people together over shared goals. I will try to listen to many voices and seek a path that serves the overall community. I will take a view that considers future needs as well as present ones. I will help citizens interact effectively, especially city council. I intend to be accessible to citizens. I'll keep office hours, and I'm going to keep out of office hours for people who are working and can't be there during the day. And that could happen to be in a coffee shop or a bar or on a hiking trail. I hope to make the job of being on city council less burdensome, thereby encouraging more people to serve. I expect and accept compromise on most things. I will strive to leave my ego at the door, and I'll endeavor to lead by example. I want to thank you for coming out tonight. I realize it's chilly. Thanks for your interest and consideration. I would appreciate your vote. My wife would really appreciate your vote because she wants me out of the house. Thanks.
Alan Delwich.
Okay, well, I've been involved with our municipal government for several years. I understand how our government works. I understand the challenges and opportunities that come with responsible governance. I think I have the experience both inside and outside of government to allow me to be an effective mayor and help us move forward. And that is based on the assumption that we will have the help of all of our citizens, both those who have been here since birth, other long-term citizens, and the many passionate and enthusiastic newcomers who have come here to help shape our community. I look forward to the challenge.
One last shout out to the Citizens Project and the League of Women Voters. And we really, it's so gratifying to see such a great turnout given the weather that we had for so much of the day, where we were even considering on our end, should we go ahead with this? Is it going to be too dangerous or whatever? And then fortunately the weather broke. But thanks, and hope you might have some time for a little mingling and discussion moving forward. And please don't forget to vote. Thank you.